welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. It is lovely to have you here. And I love hearing how and where people are listening to the podcast. I've had messages about long car journeys you've shared with the podcast, dog walking, always popular, and other people who simply choose to start their day with a mojo boosting conversation. And the podcast is gaining real momentum, so thank you so much for listening. It has entered the entrepreneurship charts in the UK, Romania, Nigeria, Australia, and I am so pleased to share, Ukraine. So if you are listening in Ukraine or you've been forced to flee and you're listening somewhere else, I hope this humble podcast brings you some kind of relief. Simply something else to think about for 45 minutes and useful for you when the time comes for rebuilding. We stand with you, Ukraine. And wherever you are, you're going to love this episode. It's almost a mini business school for founders and entrepreneurs from a highly successful female founder who gives and gives and gives in terms of advice and tactics to build a business and a community. And a lot of my guest's success has to do with her mindset, the sort of mindset you're going to need as a founder, certainly not a fixed one.
Well, forget being an entrepreneur if that's your mindset, because it's constant challenges. It's not an easy ride. It's a fulfilling ride, but it's not an easy ride. It's ups and downs. It's making money, trying something, and then that didn't work, so you've lost money on that.
My guest this week is Karen Cinnamon, founder of Smashing the Glass and Your Jewish Life. And as you'll hear, a font of knowledge and a source of amazing positivity for any prospective founder and entrepreneur. Karen talks about the reason she created her Jewish wedding blog, a classic case of spotting a gap in the market and having the bravery and ability to go and fill it, and how during COVID, a time when the wedding industry was simply put on hold, she resisted the urge to panic, but instead doubled down on her business and launched another Jewish lifestyle business. There is gold dust all the way through our conversation. So many tips and approaches for you to think about, especially on how to truly understand, serve, and delight your audience, your tribe, your core customer base. So we're going to jump straight into this today. Before we do, can I just ask you to help me out, as I'd love even more people to discover the wisdom in this series. If you can navigate the Apple Podcast app to where the review section is, it's a little fiddly, but once you're there, please do leave a short review. And please do share the link with anyone you think would appreciate it. Let's go and find some more charts for this podcast to show up in. Okay, let's go and meet today's guest, Karen Cinnamon. Welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. And I'm absolutely delighted to have a good friend and former neighbor of mine, actually, from London, Karen Cinnamon, join me, founder of Smashing the Glass and Your Jewish Life. Karen, how are you?
I'm great. It's so fun speaking to you again. We used to bump into each other regularly, and now I just have to make do with a Zoom podcast.
I know. Here we are. Distant but close, I feel, across the Zoom wires. Well, it's great to have you on the show and to talk to you about what you've created, your brands, your communities. I want to get into all of that today. But I always start here, Karen. I'm always intrigued. How's your mojo today out of 10?
Oh, well, I'll give it a good 9. I've got young children. Well, they're not so young anymore, actually, almost 7 and 8. And they've just gone back to school today, which means I can get back into my fitness routine. Right? As soon as I drop them off, I go running in Hampstead Heath. And the weather in London is so beautiful today. And what a way to start the day. And then straight into this with you. Let's do this every day. A run and a podcast. Great feeling.
The ingredients of a good mojo start to the day. Well, I mean, that's talking about habit. I'm really into the power of habit as well. And I'm sure I'll come to this towards the end in terms of other things that you know you need to be doing. But that run, by the sounds of it, because getting some endorphins going sounds key to your mojo.
Yeah, and just the scenery. I don't know where most of your audience are based, but anyone in London or probably who's traveled to London knows about Hampstead Heath. And it doesn't cease to amaze me how stunning it is, the scenery. And obviously when the sun's shining and spring, people are in a great mood. It's more sort of what I see when I like outdoor exercise. I don't like gyms and training indoors. I like being in the outdoors. I think apparently it's a real antidote. Well, it's obviously not apparently. I think it's obviously an antidote to feeling low. If you go out and spend time in the fresh air, you're always going to come home feeling better than you did before.
Absolutely. Whether it's, I don't know, Japanese sort of forest bathing that they love doing, or just getting out into nature, getting your feet, I think, on the ground is just a great way of connecting with nature.
Yeah, fresh air and perspective and all of that good stuff.
All of that good stuff. So on that basis, when I say the word mojo then, I mean, that nine came to you very quickly. What does mojo mean to you specifically?
Well, I have to admit, I don't use that word very often. But when you say the word mojo, I think of mood. How's my mood today? Mojo, I think of... yeah, sort of positivity and moving forward in a positive way.
And I was actually reading some articles about you just before we started, and you have been described as the queen of Jewish positivity.
I know.
So that mood piece is obviously very important. Tell me about that. Where did that sort of come from? What did that mean to you, being described that way?
It's funny because people that know me do describe me as a positive person, and I certainly feel like a glass half full type of person, and it was something that was instilled in me by my dear mother, you know, appreciating the little things, living today, living in the now. I think it's to do with my upbringing and also my personality. I'm a positive person, and with what I do now, it is very much about relationships, people, impact, and I suppose there is a sort of positive spin. And sadly, it's not something I was really aware of, but sadly, when sort of stuff about Judaism or Jewishness is talked about online, even in conversation, there can obviously be a lot of stress around being Jewish in today's world, and obviously rise of anti-Semitism, and sometimes feeling a bit invisible as a Jewish person, and all kinds of stuff which people talk about. And so maybe I've been sort of singled out in that piece as actually focusing on Jewish joy, or the how amazing it is to be Jewish, all the wonderful traditions. And my original brand, Smashing the Glass, is all about Jewish weddings, and that obviously is Jewish joy. So it's funny, it's all sort of enveloped in that. And yeah, I think I'm in my 40s now, and you look back on your sort of stages of life and you see how everything sort of come together for your calling in a way now. And everything feels great. I really enjoy what I do, and it's lovely to be described as that, I have to say.
and let's talk about that calling a bit, because I think that goes to the heart of the business you run, the brands you've created, and the communities that you've developed. And putting all those three words together is really important for this series of the podcast, because a lot of founders I'm talking to, yes, there is a brand, but there is a community behind it. There is a business, but there's a movement behind it. And I think you and what you've done really encapsulates that. So that calling, let's go back to that wonderful word. What was the calling for you when, and because I know you had a corporate career before what you do now, what was the moment, Karen? What was the shift?
Well, it wasn't sort of some big spiritual moment. I mean, it really was a case of life leading the way. So the sort of nutshell path to getting to where I am today. So as you say, I was a digital and brand designer. I did have my own freelance business, freelancing for all kinds of clients. And, you know, it was a great business. Having said that, I always did feel that I was at the mercy of my clients, even though it was my business. The clients were my boss, really.
Right.
Of course, you take the time off when you take the time off. But in terms of the projects, I worked in design and branding. And if the client says, make the logo twice the size, I can't see it that small, you're not going to say, no, it's staying really tiny. And that's it. You know, there's give and take. But anyway, so I think I always felt like I wanted my own little corner of the internet where I really do make up the rules. But I didn't know what. I'm a creative. I loved my design career. Anyway, as you know, we moved into the Brinsmead building, our where we met.
Kentish Town, yes.
Yes, I don't know if you remember it, but my husband and I moved in just a month before we got married. I don't know if you know that.
I remember, yeah.
Yes, and it was that journey of sort of planning a wedding as a Jewish woman and feeling excluded from the mainstream wedding platforms, magazines, media. No one was really speaking to me and what I needed to plan my wedding. And I had a light bulb moment it wasn't exactly a light bulb moment. It was more something's missing. I wonder if I can create this platform. I'm going on maternity leave. I was 13 weeks pregnant on my wedding day. And I just thought, let me create the blog, the Instagram account, the Pinterest boards that I wish I'd had access to when I was planning my wedding as a modern Jewish woman. And it started from there. And I really just expected it to be something to keep my mind occupied during maternity leave. I didn't really imagine where it could lead to. But as soon as it started, literally within weeks, so I just started with a blog and I didn't want to call it Jewish wedding style or something like that. I didn't want the word Jewish in it because I thought it sounded old-fashioned. I wanted it to have a cool vibe and I called it Smashing the Glass. Have you been to a Jewish wedding, Richard?
Well, no, sadly not, because, you know, when you talk about your wedding, I mean, we only just met each other. Yes. So I'm not going to presume. I'm not going to presume we'd have been invited. And no, I have not been to what I'd call a proper Jewish wedding. So,
well, okay. So do you know about the tradition of smashing the glass? Have you seen it in any movies or?
So I know about now, this is where, so I'm married to a Polish woman or a woman of Polish descent, and there is a smashing of a glass, which is also something that happens in traditional Polish weddings. So I do know it from that. It was a little shot glass we put beneath our feet and smashed it.
You're kidding. I never knew that.
Yeah. There is some kind of crossover commonality between what happens in, and Polish weddings are very traditional. They run, you know, literally by the book. Ours was a little bit hybrid, shall we say.
Yes.
But we did smash a glass. So there's something there.
In Jewish weddings, there are all sorts of beautiful traditions. But the tradition that's most associated, it's the equivalent of you may now kiss the bride, which sounds so terribly old fashioned now as well. But it's like the groom traditionally smashes the glass. Now we see both couples often smashing it, but traditionally the groom smashes a glass and at the end of the ceremony, and that marks the moment. And there's a whole, you know, raucous energy, joy, kissing, hugs, it's music. It's the moment of a Jewish wedding.
Wow.
So that's why I called it Smashing the Glass, because I just thought, if you know, you know, and if you don't, maybe it's not the right platform for you. Having said that, I don't have that many Polish audiences. So I think it's the right name. Anyway, so that sort of kicked off as a small blog. I started off just gathering real wedding features from friends and family that got married, and just started with that. And very quickly it took off. And, you know, the great thing about online business, as you know, is you can track your stats really easily, and it's really satisfying to see who's reading what, how many, what are they searching for. It's such a gift. And obviously I was so bowled over to see so many people interested, advertisers contacting me within a month of starting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I wanted to just build the audience for a year and then monetize. But
yeah.
It was obviously a gap and it was so needed and it was just so exciting. And obviously I did give birth to my daughter, Sasha, but you know, the business, I'm joking. I mean, it was a big deal to have a daughter, but this really was my second baby and I couldn't keep away from it on maternity leave. And within a year, it grew into my full-time business. The other business went to the side, started having a team and so on and so forth. I can continue with the story, but that's how the sort of wedding brand, and it's, people think I'm a wedding planner and I'm absolutely not a wedding planner. I am not interested in planning weddings. What I do is I create a big platforms where couples are hanging out planning their weddings to help them plan their Jewish wedding their way, to not feel restricted by the shoulds and the musts and what their parents did and what the rabbi's telling them to do, and just giving them all the resources to plan their Jewish wedding their way. So it's a very kind of current, modern, fresh brand, and it's led to so many amazing things, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And I love this this identifying of the gap.
Yes.
That was there, and as you said, for you it was a need. I looked around, it just wasn't there. No one was talking to me in the way I wanted to be spoken to. I'm gathering. Exactly. And you feel that gap. And then for it to the pace of the growth to be, as you said, not quite what you expected it to be bringing in advertising money so quickly, must have felt, well, I mean, how did that feel? Was that like validation?
Yeah, you never forget that. You know, I remember the first invoice I generated for the business, and it was just the most exciting thing ever that someone, you know, wanted to get in front of the audience that I was building. And that also it was a certain validation that this is the beginning of something that really could, you know, be a successful business. I never started it as a sort of hobby blog. It was always going to be a business.
Yeah.
But equally, I loved, you know, looking at all these joyous pictures and videos and creating, as I said originally, that corner of the internet, that's mine, where I can decide what's going in, what's not going in. And, you know, obviously now we are our advertisers, our brand partners are our clients, but there's still all, you know, we decide, are we working with this client or not? This is how we work. This is how our audience reacts best to sponsorships. You know, it's not at the mercy of, if you know what I mean.
Completely. And you mentioned that you kind of, as a counterpoint to when you were, you know, a freelancer running your own successful design business, but as you said, almost at the behest of the client, i.e. I want that logo twice the size, and you know it shouldn't be twice the size. It really shouldn't. But you're going to pay the bill. So, but now I'm getting, you know, a completely different feeling of, this is our audience. This is our platform. We understand them better than anybody. So if you want to do a brand partnership with us, I'm guessing this is how it's going to work. Is that fair?
Yeah. And also you have to be, so the audience is so savvy. The way online works is very fast paced. So as an example, when we started back in 2013, a simple banner ad could do the trick.
Yeah.
Does anyone even click on? I mean, does anyone even bother? I mean, it's not even a thing anymore because things move all the time. The audience very quickly get tired. So we're always having to, you know, to change things up anyway. And it's not that we won't do what a client wants, it's just we want to get them the best results. So here's what we think works best. We won't accept working with a lot of brands if they're not going to get a return on investment, and equally if it doesn't align with what we do or our values. So yeah, it it's such an exciting space, the online space. There's always something, you know, who knew about TikTok when I started in 2013 or anything like that, or the way videos consumed in such depth now. You know, everything's changing all the time. And I personally love that as a creative.
So for you, that's giving you more of a canvas to work with rather than, oh my God, it's just changing all the time. What are we going to do next?
Well, forget being an entrepreneur if that's your mindset, because it's constant challenges. It's not an easy ride. It's a fulfilling ride, but it's not an easy ride. It's ups and downs. It's making money, trying something, and then that didn't work, so you've lost money on that. You know, it's not about a safe, wouldn't you agree? It's not a safe, if you are, you know, maybe let's say the freelance road, what I was doing was safe. I had clients, I had a chargeable hours, but doing something like this, take COVID as an example. If our attitudes were just, this is what I do, and this is the what I do, and I won't change what I do, then my business could have gone under, being, you know, mainly about weddings and weddings getting cancelled.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to be keeping up with what the audience wants. So what did the audience need during the pandemic? My bridal planning a wedding audience needed a huge amount of help, whereas my advertisers suddenly didn't have money to spend with me because they weren't getting any money in. So my focus shifted to enhancing. We have a paid membership community for brides. So we went double, you know, all in on that to give them even more and attract many more couples to joining that Brides Club. And then for the advertisers, obviously we weren't getting new advertisers, but for our existing advertisers, what could we give them? We did weekly Zoom business coaching sessions so that we could help them pivot. We could help them think of ideas to you know, just provide community. So it's just, I'm very big believer in give the audience what they want. when they need it, and not to be about you and, you know, your business. It's about your audience, in my case anyway.
Yeah. And what I'm getting there is the opposite of a fixed mindset. It's an abundance mindset, actually, that, that as you said, you know, we're 2 years on, just over 2 years on from when COVID kind of hit. And it's, say, the wedding industry as an events industry was decimated, and that could have led to a woe is me.
Yes.
What, I don't deserve this, everything I've created. But you pivoted, and it sounds to me like you honored the audience. So what do they want? And also, what I also love is, what do my clients, as in the advertiser clients, what do they need right now?
Yeah. And it also, I'm a big believer also in relationships in business. So, you know, some of our advertisers, when it came to renewing their subscriptions with us, they just couldn't do it. And we understood that, and we kept them on, you know, complimentary for however long. I think some of them up to a whole year and a half. And obviously, when, you know, I think now everyone is either paying or not with us, because there's only so long you want to carry people like that. But certainly through the hardest times, and it's the right thing to do. And obviously, again, from a business point of view, many of them continued. Whereas if we'd have just said, "You're not paying, bye," you know, we wouldn't have. Seen them still with us today.
So
it's just about relationships. It's also, the pandemic gave me a incredible silver lining to my business, because I was all in on Smashing the Glass. Plenty of people had said to me, "Why don't you do something for after the wedding? You know, you've got this really dedicated, loyal audience that love what you do while they get married," and then they get married and then they're gone.
Right.
I just want to be really good at this one thing. And I think I also want to talk about niche and the fact that, I'll come back to that niche, because niche is so important. What I do is very niche, and I think that's part of why it works. But I just wanted to be really known for this one thing, really good at this one thing. And I was absolutely, me and my team, just so packed with work. I couldn't even think about starting another brand unless I was really going to get some investment and all kinds of stuff happening. So that was Smashing the Glass, and I was perfectly happy with it. But when the pandemic hit, when the advertising income dipped, when I had all this time to, when I looked at my audience and thought, what do they really need right now? They needed community, online community. They needed a place to come together. And I mentioned earlier, I have a Brides Club membership. So we have several streams of income. One of those income streams in the wedding business is this paid membership, a subscription for brides. That they're part of a wonderful community membership. They get all kinds of benefits when they're married. Sorry, when they're planning their wedding. And I mentioned that I was kept being asked to do sort of something for after the wedding, and I said no. However, if we rewind back to before the pandemic, some of the brides in my club were saying, "Karen, we don't want to actually get married because we don't want to end Brides Club. We love being in Brides Club.
Wow.
Can you create something for life after the wedding, please?" And I just thought, you know what? I'll create something really small that's almost behind closed doors. You don't know about it unless you are in the Brides Club, and then you almost graduate into this other paid membership. So we did it. It was a really small part of the business, and it wasn't, you know, it was nice, but it was more a sort of graduation from Brides Club thing. It wasn't something that I thought about that much. Then during the pandemic, when I realized what people needed more than ever was community, I thought, I can't just keep this small little community for newlyweds. Why don't I open it up to all Jewish women? And create this wonderful supportive space where people can feel empowered and learn and meet people, meet other Jewish women, make Jewish friends, which is a really hard thing to do in adulthood, make new Jewish friends. And so I went all in on that. Now, around a paid product, you need to have free content, be it a podcast, Instagram, website, whatever you're doing, but you can't easily get a lot of people into a membership without having a big free platform. So that's when the Your Jewish Life brand started in September 2020 with the Instagram account, which has just blown up. It's so popular, so big, so exciting. And then the podcast, and then obviously the paid membership is really big now as well. And it's just overtaken, in a way, the Smash in the Glass brand.
Oh, wow.
Because the audience is so much bigger, because it's not the micro niche of Jews and then Jews planning a wedding.
Right.
This is all Jewish women. Well, not all Jewish women. My target audience are millennials, sort of 20s to 40s. But obviously we get all age groups. But yeah, so going back to your original question 3 hours ago of what's my calling, I wouldn't describe it as a calling as much as, although I describe it as calling, I wouldn't describe it as a calling. I was called to do something. It's more what I've been led to through life decisions, you know, whatever my audience need, just feels really great. And I feel much more like this is my place, almost even more than the smashing the glass stuff, which is great and good fun, but this is really creating such an impact, because I hear lots of stories every day of, you know, people that have been impacted by this new the Jewish life.
Yeah.
Because our message is quite different. So you might think, okay, it's a Jewish lifestyle brand, but more than that, what we're telling young Jews is you can not go to synagogue but still feel very Jewish and passionate, and you know, you don't have to keep kosher, you don't have this, do it your way. Like, what brings you Jewish joy? What is it a Friday night dinner with your family? Is it baking challah, which is the beautiful Jewish bread? You know, is it listening to Jewish music? Is it eating a bagel with smoked salmon at your favorite, you know, Jewish deli? You know, it's really, and as you know, talked right back, been about positivity, it's really uplifting, Jewish, joyful brand. And it's sort of bringing people back into, you know, what they love about being Jewish, and stripping away all the sort of judgment and the shoulds and the musts. And so, whereas smashing the glass is your Jewish wedding your way, you know, you should both smash a glass if you want to, or drop that tradition if you don't want to, but, you know, make it your own.
Yeah.
So the Your Jewish Life is short for Your Jewish Life Your Way. It's kind of live your Jewish life your way.
Yeah.
So that's the very, very long answer to your question.
No, I appreciate it, but I'm just, you know, isn't it amazing that just going back to that moment in the pandemic, of the space that it gave you allowed for that creativity to happen? Because who knows? As you said, you're everything's on Smashing the Glass, it's going really well, all your resources are in there, haven't got any time to look up.
No.
And then time was created for us, and that's how you chose to use it. And what I love is just this, you know, both brands just create this level of acceptance. I get a sense of you be who you want to be without, because there's a lot of judgment, I think, around anything with, I think, with a religious connotation comes a lot of judgment.
Yes.
And in that, I just wanted to check in with you, because you are living your life out there. You are a very public Jewish modern woman.
Yes. Do
you get any, does negativity come your way as well, Karen?
So in periods, I'd say sort of, first of all, the entire Smashing the Glass, you know, we featured Jewish Muslim weddings, we featured all kinds of fusion weddings. We've never once had a negative comment on any of the platforms, because I just think when you're seeing such joy, how can you dive in with, you know, something political or racist? I mean, so that's an amazing thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to the Jewish life, obviously there's more room for, you know, conversation and opinions. And obviously, may I just add that within Jewish culture, there's a lot of debate and opinion within Jews themselves. They say two Jews, three opinions. So there's always some kind of debate going
right.
on. But in terms of sort of hate, there was, I was you know, trolled, for want of a better word, during the height of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict last year in 2021. But, and you know, every now and then some idiot will you know, post something and I'll block it. But I'm fortunate, it just doesn't come into my thinking that, oh God, what if I post this or what if I say this and a hater sees it? But having said that, there are a lot of people that don't really understand, you know, Jewish people, or think all Jewish people are, you know, spokespeople for the Israeli government or whatever. I don't know. And I think there's a lot of what I do is sort of enabling people to sort of create conversations around that, and healthy conversations or room for opinions with sort of decent people, not kind of extremists. But I think those trolls live online, and they'll always be around, and never to think, you know, to be constrained by what they may think or judge, or it's just, you can't be scared. Can't live in fear.
Yeah, no, and it's great to hear. I mean, it sounds like your brand of positivity
gets
you through that. And I think, you know, I've spoken to a fair amount of influencers, creators on the podcast, and there's always somebody who has got something going on that they'll want to express something in a way that can be very hateful. But what I'm pleased to hear is this doesn't stop people like you keeping doing what you're doing.
I mean, this you'll find interesting. So as I said earlier, you know, we encourage people to live their Jewish life their way. Now, if you want to have a cheeseburger, so in Jewish law, you're not supposed to mix milk with meat. I personally don't eat cheeseburgers, but I know Jews that do. And I think good luck to them. Let them do their thing. Who am I to judge? And I encourage you to, you know, eat a cheeseburger if that's your thing, and then do whatever else you want to do that makes you feel Jewish in another way. And I get a fair amount of comments, not hate, but it's kind of judgment, shall I call it, from more religious Jews that think, why is she telling them it's okay not to follow Jewish law or keep kosher? So, you know, that's an interesting kind of side, you know, that I didn't expect. And again, I wouldn't let it, you know, change. I think it's so important to have a voice, to stand for something. You can't be in business and in 2022, or if you're listening to this a year later, 2023, and want to appeal to everybody. So even within my niche of Jewish, there's Jews that don't appeal, that don't like what I'm doing or not magnetized to my brand. And I think that's a really good thing. I think you've got to attract and repel with what you do. Otherwise, you'll never be known for anything. You'll never, you know, so people think of Jewish joy or Jewish positivity, they think of me. Whereas if I try to appeal to all Jews, like, when there's a conversation about something, be like, well, who should we interview for this? Like, I don't know, to interview this one. No, they think straight away of me. So you've got to stamp something. You've got to be known for something specific. And as I say, if you're attracting and repelling, that's a really good sign.
I think that is a gold dust piece of advice there. And that attract and repel piece, because I'm not sure I've ever really thought about it that way. Because I think perhaps when you're a small business owner, you're like, I want to attract everybody, but it's as useful as healthy for you to actually, I'm definitely not for you. And no. I can recommend some people who would be great for you, but I'm not that person, but I'm awesome for you over there. Having a sense of that.
People in this day and age want to feel connected to the brands they love. You know, I'm personally like obsessed with Apple, less so in the recent years. I used to be completely obsessed with them. And, you know, that thing of just, you know, whatever they bring out, I'll buy it. I don't even have to, you know, read about it. I'll buy it, you know. So that's a sort of feeling that people want. You know, what business doesn't want their customers to feel like that about them? And in order to make people feel connected to you, you've got to go sort of all in on the things that they're into, and you've got to really know your audience. So if you're going all in on the things that your audience are into, you're going to have a bit of a, you know, a style, or you're going to stand for something, or you're going to be known for something. And I just think, let the people that you really want to attract be really attracted to you, and let others go somewhere else. You don't need thousands of clients. You need, you know, well, I mean, in my case, even with my memberships, I probably do need thousands of clients, but there's still enough. There's still thousands of Jewish women that will pay me, you know? So yeah, definitely going back to what you said, the abundance mindset, and just going all in, and not being scared of someone not liking you, or not liking your content, or not liking what you do.
Yeah, that's great advice. And how do you find You know, you did mention the wonderful thing about an internet-based business is all the data. You can see, you put out a piece of content, boom, that spiked. Obviously, that was loved. This next one, not so much. Beyond that, how else are you creating that conversation with your community? Because you are so dialed into them, into what they want and what they love. How else are you doing that?
So because we have our paid memberships, those are closed, you know, very private groups, smaller groups than what you'd get, you know, on an Instagram audience. We ask them, you know, you just ask them. So we've got, it's almost like having a focus group ready and waiting, you know, for your absolute ideal clients, because they really do love you so much to sort of pay to be part of your community. And we love them and we get to know them. And, you know, very often, let's say when I record a podcast episode, there's one particular member who I love. And if I could have, you know, 300-400 of that same person in my membership, I'd say yes, please. So before I record a podcast episode, her name's Ashley, I tell myself, this podcast episode is for Ashley. Give Ashley what she'd want from this podcast episode. So I know her so well through the membership, and she's my ideal client type, that I just have to think of that one person. And I do think that's good advice, because when you think of, like, I'm trying to appeal to this whole bunch of people, it's really hard to know what they want and what they'd want from an episode or what they'd want from a product. So if you can just single out, like, one person you've worked with recently who you just would love 10 of those to call you tomorrow, it makes life so much easier. So that's one way. Also, another little sort of hack, what I love is Instagram polls. So sometimes, let's say if I'm releasing a freebie, a free downloadable to build my mailing list, I'll tell people, which of these do you want, this one or that one? And they'll vote. And often I've produced both of them by then anyway. And I'll say, you know, literally straight after the poll, I'll say, great, you know, 80% of you wanted this one, here it is. So, like, you know, while their momentum is high, you know, on Instagram polls, you can also directly message all the people that said yes. So you can, I'm sorry, I'm going into no, sort of detail tactics now, but what I'm trying to say is ask them, ask your people, what do they want? Sometimes you can be clever enough to know what they want before they even want it. And reading through the lines also of conversations, if anybody listening has a Facebook group, a free Facebook group, or gets a comments going on their Instagram, you know, just get conversation going and sort of read between the lines. And that's a great way also to find out what your audience are wanting. So going back to the pandemic, I was getting on my wedding account, Smashing the Glass on Instagram. It's a Jewish wedding account. It's nothing to, I'm not an expert on coronavirus, but I was getting messages saying, what should I do? I'm getting married next September. Should I cancel? Should I postpone? Should I stick to it? And so, because I was getting so many of those messages, I was like, right, I need to do something. I need to do a resource around what to do if you're getting married in the next 12 months. It was really detailed, you know, built my mailing list with that, and then followed it up with getting them into my Brides Club paid community. Yeah. So it's just listen to what people want. If they're not telling you, read between the lines and comments and conversations.
Yeah, really smart. And I guess this leads on to my next question, Karen, is there's lots of conversations happening, lots of members to look after and stay close to. This must have necessitated a growth in the team, your side. So I'd love to just talk about that, how you've grown your team. Also that, as all founders have, that sense of there's a bit of letting go that has to happen in that. How was that for you?
So I think the hardest one is always the first hire, I think. So I'll rewind right back to sort of Smashing the Glass days. It was still quite new. I was obviously doing everything. At the time, it was mainly everything on the website. So I was creating posts, you know, doing everything, dealing with advertisers, putting their whatever. And I thought, what are the bits that I just don't actually like doing, some of the dull stuff? And I figured out, because I needed to buy back some time at that point, I just needed to buy back some time. I had I just have one child at the time, I don't remember, but I had one child after the other, so I had several years of very young children. And I just put a post on Facebook to my personal network and said, I'm looking for someone to help with Smashing the Glass a few hours a week. Does anyone know anyone? And in my network, someone recommended someone that had interned for her. I had a few applications. This one stood out. Anyway, she started, this is way back, I think I'd been going just a year and a half. She started working for me a few hours a week, doing all the bits that I didn't enjoy doing. So I wasn't letting go of anything that could, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? She can make a mistake. We've got to allow your team to make mistakes. Right. You've got to allow that, because they, you don't want them working thinking, oh God, what if I make a mistake? It's like, a mistake, fine, let's try it again. But anyway, people make mistakes. She was pretty good. And she eventually increased her hours. My next hire was someone to do more writing. So at the time, as I said, it was all about smashing the glass, lots of features, lots of content all the time, sponsored posts. I'm not, my forte is not writing. I'm a more sort of strategist, creative designer. Again, hire the people to do the things that you're not amazing at, because you can't be amazing at everything. So best get you working on what you're amazing at and have someone else working on what they're best at. Now, obviously, I want to talk about, you know, paying someone. I think that's also one of the fears. Like, I'm not making enough money yet. How am I, can I be able to pay other people? What I realized when I hired my first hire was I was making more money because I had more time to think of ideas, to build relationships, to, you know, so it was just a no-brainer to give her more time. Right. And then keep adding people in. And now we have, for the last, I think, 4 years, we've been a team of five, and it's been the same five people. That original hire left a few years ago, but since she's left, we've had the same five people, and they're just fantastic. And they're in America and here, because most of my audience are in America.
Right. So that, yeah, that often people say that first,
yes,
sharing of the load, that first tie is the toughest. And then it's like, this is a no brainer. As you're saying, it's like, getting people who are really good at stuff that I don't like doing.
Yeah. I mean, I bet you could reel off a load of tasks that you wish someone else was doing.
So many.
Yeah, exactly. So I would just literally write down, you know, I would, not to you, I'm saying to anyone who's thinking about, you know, write down the tasks that you're doing that someone else could do, and just start small, like I did with someone a few hours. Everybody knows someone who wants to do, you know, a few hours work, virtual assistant around. So it's a really smart thing to do. I've also heard people say, but Karen, I don't want to give any part of my business away. Like, what if they, you know, have the keys to the car and they don't, this? I say to them, you know what? Yes, you are a special snowflake, but you're a trapped special snowflake. It's no point being a special snowflake that's brilliant at everything and no one else can do any of your job, but feeling like, well, you're totally trapped. You can't grow your business. You can't make more money. You can't, you know, it's not a smart move in my opinion, personal opinion. I know.
No, but great advice, because that you need to allow some vulnerability if you're going to be, to live to your potential. I think you've got to find that vulnerability of oh no, I know the special sauce, the special secret. If I share it, what's going to happen? Well, you won't get any bigger. It's certainly the case. Yeah. Oh, fabulous stuff. Karen, I wanted to sort of getting towards the close now, coming right back to the beginning. We talked about, you've been running this morning. Are there any other things that you just know, right, in my routine for my mojo to be at that 8, 9, maybe even a 10, I've got to get these things done in a day? What are your routines?
Definitely to have gaps in the day. I think if I'm just, you know, I absolutely love what I do. So I think like all of us who run our own business, you know, we just, the time goes and you just get sucked in, you're sat at the desk. So definitely, you know, time away from the desk, whether it's a phone call, whether it's a run, whether it's popping out to get lunch. I'm not very good at completely stopping and doing something else, like going to meet a friend or something. I need to be sort of, a work day is a work day. I don't actually want to be distracted with like something completely different. But equally, not something that I need to do every day, but within a working week, I like to have variety. So I don't work from home all the time and I don't work in an office all the time. I mix it up.
Got it.
And I really love that. I love my, you know, as a entrepreneur, I know so many of us work into the evening, work late at night. I love my dinners with my husband. He's very good at this, and he's made me very good at this. No matter what, we always have dinner together. We cook dinner together. We sit down, we have dinner together. And that's our special time, and that's sacred. And then I might, you know, just jump onto a bit of Instagram because I enjoy it so much after dinner. He might watch some TV, but that is our time together.
Got it.
You know, and yeah, just mixing the day up a bit. Mm. But I just, it's a good thing. And I sometimes say to people, it's a good thing and a bad thing that I love what I do so much, because I, not that I'm a workaholic, but I just love it.
Yeah.
And my husband's really good at balance, and I'm always trying to get inspired by him, but not sure I'm doing such a good job at it. So yeah, I try to create gaps.
Mm.
Probably not the best person to speak to about sort of healthy working routines, because I can't keep away. A bit like when I had my baby and I had this business, I couldn't keep away from it.
but it sounds to me like you know that, you know, this energy management, I would call that, you know, that
yes.
I could fill my day because I love it so much, but I know to be at my best, I need these little breaks.
Yes.
I need dinner with my husband, time with the kids.
Yeah.
And then it sounds like when you go back to maybe doing a bit of Instagram live later on, you're more refreshed.
Yeah.
You've got more to give.
Yeah. And obviously can't live without my holidays. That's one of the reasons I love working hard. I love a luxury holiday and, you know, a good time away. I think there's a sort of saying, you know, everyone works so hard in London to save up to get out of London. You know, that's the only way to live in London is to have
to
the breaks away. Yeah,
exactly.
But I just love, you know, getting away. But yeah, daily routines. I'm not one of these, you know, get up at 5 a.m. do my yoga and meditation. I just enjoy what I do, and a few gaps here and there, running, as I said. I'm lucky enough. I really enjoy all day, every day, mainly most of the time.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for sharing all this, your experience, wisdom, tips and techniques for what's built an amazing, as I said, business, brand and community over the last few years. And I can't wait to see what comes next. So Karen, thank you so much for joining the Mojo podcast today.
Thank you. It's been great fun. I've loved it.
How good was that? I loved that conversation with someone I've actually known for ages, but we've never really chatted like this before. So thank you, Karen. Such huge generosity there in sharing so much. And I made so many notes on this episode, it's going to be quite hard to pick out some takeouts, but here goes. So I've got to start with attract and repel. That is such a useful mantra, that you can't be in business and please everyone all of the time. And really, truly understanding your audience will mean you will create content for them and they will love it. I personally need to do more of that, for sure. And having this abundance mindset versus a fixed one, how powerful is this when, frankly, things don't go to plan? And as an entrepreneur, as a founder, they won't always go to plan. Like weddings simply stopping happening. And if you're in the wedding business, that's a major issue. And I can see how having this abundant mindset really helped Karen pivot and focused on the next most important thing to do in the middle of that particular crisis. And getting yourself some help, even a few hours a week to begin with, as Karen suggests, to outsource the tasks that you don't enjoy and therefore someone else will simply perform them better. Letting go allows you to grow. Amazing stuff. And in a few weeks, I'll be compiling a special end of series episode to capture the core themes that I've picked up from this and other amazing conversations. Before that, we're back in 2 weeks' time with another all-female founding partnership who have created a massively successful business over the past 8 years. And they'll share some of their learnings here for you and for your mojo. Okay, until then, please do remember to leave that short review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with other people who you think would find it beneficial. And until we meet again, I hope your mojo continues to flow.